Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred with Tony Moore, where we explore strategies, programs, and people who work to change the destructive thinking that leads to criminal behavior. In this podcast, Tony speaks with Kay Shea Helovic, author of It's Not Your Fault, a workshop for parents, family, and friends of parents of offenders or at-risk youth.
Oh, I'm Tony Moore, and welcome to another Criminal Thinking Deterred show. Here we talk about how to take responsibilities for your decisions, stop hurting people, begin ministering to others, and end the criminal thinking that deters everyone. I'm here with my producer, Philip Day, for another fresh podcast. Today, my guest will be Kay Shea Helovic. We are here at Criminal Thinking Deterred. We'll go through some issues with how using the thinking approach help individuals to go and think better so they can do better. Kay has a different approach, which I wholeheartedly come to understand and like since I've read a little bit of her workbook. Kay, could you tell us a little bit about your bio and your background and how you decided to write this book on It's Not Your Fault?
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say I come from a very service-oriented person. So I've grown up service-oriented family. So I've grown up with the intention, I think, driven by the intention to help people. And so I was going through a divorce long time ago, and I decided that I needed to get a job. And so I went to Hennepin County, which is the greater Minneapolis area. Mm-hmm. Applied for every job that I felt I could do because I had to support my children. So turned out that I was hired in the hospital.
Hello,
then I was
I'm
hired
Tony Moore, and welcome to another County Criminal
School,
Thinking Deterred.
It's really a prison for kids. I could give you the long explanation, but basically it is a place for children who have been committed by the court for very serious crimes. It's not like a runaway prison or anything like that. I refer to these kids or children. I most often I call them children.
Mm-hmm.
I refer to them as the 10% of the kids who commit 90% of the crimes. These particular children that I work with in the most serious offender program work very hard to get to where they were. Their job was criminal behavior. They really devoted themselves to committing crime. It was their job, night and day. So I was very naive in the beginning because, as I said, I really wasn't trained to work in corrections. I was trained as a psychologist. So what I did was I started to experiment, try different theories that I knew of from college, and nothing was working. So that's how I got there, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking for a job. But when I got there, I discovered that the superintendent who hired me was committed to helping these children change their criminal behavior. He told me, we have a huge budget here, you can do whatever you want, but it is your job to figure out why these children do the things they do. And I was like, whoa, that's a big assignment. I don't think anybody's really figured that out. But I took it very, very seriously. And as I said, I tried all these theories that I knew of from college, and I knew from the look on the children's faces and their parents that they weren't really buying it. They would go along with it because I was the director and I was the one who had to decide when their son would leave the program.
Mm-hmm.
I really, in the beginning, I'd say for the first 3 or 4 years, the work that I did was not very helpful. And I think that I'm not unusual in that. I think there are a lot of young people enter the field of corrections thinking, believing myths that we believe in, which were, it's the parents' fault, it's because of the drugs, it's the school that didn't treat him right. So I was sort of in that frame of mind of thinking, learned after, I mean, it took me 4 years, and I think most people who go into corrections don't, you know, have 4 years to figure this out. And so that's why I wrote the book, for families and for staff, so that they could skip all that time that I spent spinning my wheels and getting on to the reality of who these serious offenders really are.
Okay. Do the program or the curriculum work for both genders?
You know, good question. I only worked with young male offenders. And so I'm not sure. You know, right now, Tony, I just founded a foundation that is really in a large part geared towards proving beyond what we've already proven, which was significant. We did a very significant study at the end of my term. But they were all male, and we had a very small female population at that time, and they were not part of my work. You know, I really didn't have jurisdiction with females. And so we want to continue the research and find out, would females do as well with this approach as males have done? We'll find out.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting population too. Sometimes they get left behind, the female population, for especially in the corrections, when we're doing experimental programs and starting new studies, and they could benefit well. The research does show that, especially in cognitive behavioral approaches, that female do just as well as male when given the opportunity to have those programs. I see that you have one big part of your program. It's called the Blame Game. And when it comes to antisocial behavior, how does that work?
So the Blame Game is actually a term that was coined by my publisher, Amazon, published my book. And when they did the marketing on the book, they were the ones who came up with the saying, the Blame Game. But I thought it was appropriate because of all these myths that we have about why do these children do the things they do. And that's where the Blame Game comes in. First of all, 99% of the people that I talk to blame the parents. It's always the parents' fault. So we blame them, then we blame drugs, or then we blame the school, or then we never blame the person who is committing the crime, which is one thing that was huge for me and that I would really like to convey to other people that are in the field or thinking about working with these particular children. It is not necessarily the parents' fault. I mean, we know there are some, quote, bad parents, but you know, we didn't waste our time. We figured out, don't waste your time blaming all these other sources of, you know, interaction, because that's not where it's at. And if you let a child believe that it's really their parents' fault or it's the drugs' fault or whatever, that they adopt that thinking, then they believe, oh, really my parents' fault. And so we stay away from that completely. We go directly to the fact that it's the person who committed the crime. It's their fault.
Oh, okay. Well, when you decided to write this book, what prompted you to go into the writing of it?
Yes. So after I was at the institution for 15 years, my husband and I started a company of psychologists who assess and develop managers and executives in Fortune 100 and Global 1000 companies. And we open 35 offices globally. We are all over the world. And so, needless to say, that was a lot of work. And he said to me, if you want to see me, you better leave your work with Hennepin County and come with me. So we did this we built this company. We had 700 employees all over the world. And then we sold it. And I knew immediately what I wanted to do, which was get back to these kids and corrections and write the book. I always said, God, if you let me live long enough, I'm going to write that book. Mm. 4 years ago, as soon as we sold the company, I wrote the book. And I decided to write it for parents because, as I said, I think they are the most blamed, the most punished, the most ignored people in the process. So I wrote it for the parents, but I included in the book everything that we did in our program, our cognitive behavioral program. So this book is used not only by parents, it's kind of a stretch for parents actually, but it's also used by the staff institutions because it lays out everything that we did there.
Was it easy or you had more success using a cognitive behavioral approach versus a rational emotive approach? Why was the cognitive approach more of what you needed to use?
Okay, so good question. I did struggle with this for a long time. And one day, one of my social workers in the program came to me and said, hey, there's this new book out. It's called Inside the Criminal Mind. And I was like, whoa. And so I picked up the phone, called the author of that book, and went to a training session that he ran in Chicago the following week. And I walked out of there with my social worker, and we said, this guy knows criminals. And what we found about this book that had 52 errors of thinking in it, what we found was that it established a language, you know, in our program. So we had 24 children in our program at all times. And these errors in thinking were so right on that the kids adopted them and the staff adopted them because they said, hey, that's who we are. They recognized that thinking and they said, yeah, well, we need to learn about our errors in thinking, because that will maybe make us free. And I was committed to giving these children something that they could take with them when they left. Some programs, you know, had the ones where they go to the Scared Straight, like that. There are all kinds of programs. But the main thing is survival programs. You know, can you make it in the woods by yourself for a week? Well, in my opinion, that doesn't really matter a lot. If you haven't looked at your thinking and you haven't straightened out your thinking, you can survive in the wilderness all you want, but that's not what it's about.
Yes. You know,
what it's about is learning these errors in thinking and internalizing them and conceptualizing them and see how they affect your whole life, and leave the institution and take all of that with you. The kids used to say to me, you're brainwashing me. Good, because you need to change your thinking about the world in general. You know, your thinking is getting you into so much trouble, and the thinking is wrong. And so we formed this language, and in the program for 8 years, kids talk to each other in that language of the errors of thinking. They learn from each other and they internalize their own thinking problems and changed them, and left, the chief judge of the juvenile court asked the Minneapolis Star Tribune to do a story on me and my program, which I didn't realize that he had recommended it. But the reason, he said later, the reason he recommended it was because these were the most serious offenders, and the probation officers reported to him, the chief judge, that when kids got out of my program, they never saw them again. They were free. They were good. They were fine.
All right.
So then I started to realize what a good job we were doing. I didn't even know for sure, you know, because you're so busy doing the program, you don't have time to do research. But we came to the University of Nevada that 74% of those most serious offenders were not seen in court. They followed them for a whole year, even into adulthood if they had to, 1 year follow-up. 74% were not reoffending, and I just had no idea that it was that effective, but it worked.
That's effective, 74%.
After my husband and I did this other company, it was the first thing on my mind. I have to get back to these kids.
You got an assessment component. What does assessment component look for in, is it for referral purposes? Is it for intake purposes? Or is it for all? Is it comprehensive?
Yes, the assessment, which we did within the first week or two of the bringing this child into our program, the assessment was done for a whole bunch of reasons, mainly we wanted to know, you know, how far into chemicals is this person? What are this person's errors of thinking? What will we have him writing about? Because there was a lot of writing. These kids had to log every day. So the question was, is he capable of writing? You know, during this assessment process, we measured the grade level that they were at on their reading, their spelling, and their math. So then at the end, we could see, you know, what changes were there. And so the assessment, you know, part of the assessment would have probably even followed into his future referral if we needed it to. But basically, the assessment was so that we could tell this child, our staff, his parents, the court, we had to write a report based on the assessment. What did this child need? You know, what was it going to take for this kid to become a really successful citizen, which was ultimately our goal? We wanted them to contribute, you know, make a good life for themselves and their families and their victims. Most of all, their victims. I mean, the assessment included a lot of information about the victims and what they actually did in the process of their criminal behavior over many years before we got to them. You know, they were 14 to 17 when we got them, but they had a long criminal history before that. We wanted to understand all of that, have all that information so that when we're working with them going forward, we can be more effective.
Is there a written report that goes with that for a treatment plan?
Right. That is the treatment plan, and I was the director, so I had to write the plan for each of those 24 children. And the staff, my staff, were required to follow through on that report and do the things that we did in the program and meet the individual child's needs. You know?
Okay. So when a parent is reading your workbook, is the assessment component easy for the parent to follow through and get some information where they can feel comfortable? Because I would imagine it'd be hard for a parent to be objective when it's their parent, their child they're looking at.
Exactly. And so I said in the book, you know, you're going to need some help with this part of the assessment. Like the school that the child is going to when they leave, they should do the academic part of the assessment and see what the needs are. It depends on where they're going when they leave, but the assessment continues, and it is hard for parents. I mean, as I said, this book is a little bit pushing the edges for families and parents because it's a lot of work and it's a lot of information. But there is, for example, where was that? On page 6, I have like 15 or 20 assessment questions that parents could ask. You know, oh my gosh, the poor parents, how did they know what is wrong with their kid? You know, is it ADA? There's so many things that it could be that their child. But if they look at page 6 and they go through that whole list and they start asking those questions, that is a list that parents can handle. And they can easily do that. But there's many other parts of the assessment that the parents want help with in the process of implementing the suggestions in the book.
Can you give us the information on how they can get your book?
How they can what?
How they can get your book, other parents or the people who are watching today, how would they be go about getting your book?
Very easy. It's on Amazon. So you just go into Amazon and books, you know, that you can order and write it. The name of my book is It's Not Your Fault, a workbook for parents of offenders. So they just look under that title, and I think there may be there are like 3 or 4 other books that are called It's Not Your Fault. But my subtitle is For Parents of Offenders. And so in my name, of course, they'll see my name. It's C-A-Y, last name is S-H-E-A space H-E-L-L-E-R-B-K. Yeah, my parents would find tremendous relief in reading this book. You know, we simply cannot go on blaming parents. And then give them no tools to work with. You know, at least the book has a lot of tools in it that they can use, because parents are at their wit's end. Now, you know that.
Yes.
And they really, and then everybody's blaming them. So they're so ashamed. And they just don't know where to turn. You know, psychology, psychiatrists. They go to all these different people to try to figure it out. But if they look at page 6, and they read through these questions, they're going to know they're dealing with a kid who needs help with their criminal thinking.
Yeah, and when you're watching children or adults who are trying to understand the criminal approach or the cognitive approach to changing their life, and watching them develop habits that says, okay, let me be accountable, it's strange to be a part of that, because you change also in your approach to with the child. You now got to give the child some freedom to make some mistakes, or the adult to make some mistakes on their own independently as they take accountability for their thinking. When you're doing this as a therapist, it's an empathy thing. You have to have empathy to be able to see the child through and know where they're coming from as they go through the struggles of changing. So my hat is off to you for writing a book of this content, because this was so needed. I did cognitive behavioral therapy my own self, and was so enamored by what it was like to change my thinking. I still have some thoughts that goes there, but now I'm able to call those thoughts into stopping and change them. From the therapist and the facilitators who delivered it. So do you see a need for community involvement to teach more parents this approach?
A need for what involvement?
A community involvement from the grassroots.
Yes, absolutely. The more people that know this language and can speak this language with kids, the more respect those people are going to have. You know, the community people, it's really good if they can take the time to understand the language and the thinking that goes into the change process for these kids, because it's hard, like you're saying. It is not an easy thing to change. And the more support we can give them by knowing who they really are, the better. They're gonna know that we know, and then they're gonna think, wow, people know how I think and what I do, and either I'm going to get worse or I'm going to get better. You know, we told the kids in our program, you know, a third of you are going to end up dead on the street. A third of you are going to be successful, and you're going to make it out there. And the other third of you is going to spend their life in prison. So which one would you like? You know, look around this room, because I mean, I buried three children that had been in my program.
Yes.
They were very, you know, it's a horrible, horrible situation to find these children murdered, you know, dead, that you worked with and you knew. And it's just so hard. So we pointed that out to these kids a lot, because it was reality. If you don't change, you could be, there's a 1/3% chance that you're going to be dead on the street. Mm. So you got to change, you know?
Yes. So how can we get the listener to get in contact with you? Is there any information that they can contact you by the website or anything?
Yes.
Or a little bit about your foundation?
Yes, the foundation is up and running. In fact, we're giving our first grant this year. By the end of this year, we have to give our first grant. And so the website is going to be the best way to look at all of this, and it should be up and running, I would think, in the next few weeks. And I'm going to put as much information on there as I can to help people. And there will be a specific email address. And so we're getting that out as fast as we can. But they can always, you know, log into Amazon and get the book. The book comes out really fast. It's you'd have the book in very few days, and it's not expensive. So I want everybody to be able to afford it. And of course, the money goes into the foundation. So yes, I'd say get the book.
Yes, it's a very good read. The book is a very good read. I got it. I thank you for it. I'm very excited for the direction that you are taking. I think it's very much needed.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks, Tony.
Yes. You have been watching another rendition of Criminal Thinking Deterred. If you'd like some more information, please contact me at my email or my website, www.mooreandassociates.biz. You'll be able to get the phone number, 262-605-1444, or you can find the email, and you'll be able to email me at tmoore@mooreandassociates.biz. Where we offer assessments, intensive outpatient, aftercare, AODA treatment groups, gang prevention, and other services. And you are welcome to go through the website and look through at all the services and all the things that we do. And we'd like to thank you again, Dr. Helovic, for being a part of our show. And for joining us, we'd like to let you know that God designed you for a purpose, to serve Him and others, and have a blessed day.
Thank you.
This episode of Criminal Thinking Deterred was sponsored by Moore & Associates in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Call us at 262-605-1444 or email tmoore@mooreandassociates.biz. Moore & Associates offers assessments, intensive outpatient, aftercare, alcohol and drug abuse addiction treatment, gang prevention, and other services. Tony is also available for speaking engagements and professional consultations. Come back soon for our next episode, and please remember, lifestyle changes begin in the mind.
That once betrayed, you missed the years you never made. And love that may haunt you, song that may hurt you. I need to keep a distance from the sound.
now than if you knew me back when I was new.